I'm John Kroll. Today on No Limits, we're going to talk about how property neglect and abandoned buildings have affected crime rates in one Indianapolis community. My guests are Indianapolis Metropolitan Police Department Officer Nathan Schell, Indy Star reporters Ryan Martin and James Briggs, and 10 Point Coalition leader Leroy Smith. Please join the conversation. Call 866-476-3881. Send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at No Limits WFYI, or track us down on Twitter at WFYI. Now, this news. Welcome to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StatehouseFile.com, and your host. We're going to be talking today about the ways that property neglect and abandoned buildings have affected crime rates in one Indianapolis community. This program really piggybacks on a joint collaborative reporting effort between WFYI and the Indianapolis Star. If you want to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. Send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi, or track us down on Twitter at WFYI. My guests are Indianapolis Metropolitan Police Department Officer Nathan Schell, Indianapolis Star reporters Ryan Martin and James Briggs, and 10 Point Coalition leader Leroy Smith. Welcome to all of you.
Thank you.
Thanks.
It's good to have you here. So I'm going to throw it first to Ryan and James and ask how this project came together, how you started to do the reporting. And I'll let you guys decide which one of you talks first.
Sure. So Ryan and I are working on a year-long project called The Toll, which is an examination of violence in Indianapolis. That's something the Indianapolis Star is committed to this year. We want to sort of peel back the layers of violence, explain what's happening, why it's happening, what solutions might be out there, what solutions are not being used at the moment. And this story in particular interested us for a few reasons. It has been a source of frustration for the city for many years now. It has been considered a nuisance property. A lot of police runs, a lot of crime happens at this property. And we thought Town and Terrace is sort of a microcosm for the systemic problems that are occurring across the city. You have extreme poverty within Town and Terrace, which is a 20-acre property, I should note, at 42nd and Post. It's a condominium complex built in the 1960s, which was a very middle-class area for many decades that sort of declined after job loss in the 80s and 90s. And now it's an area where there are 222 units, and about half of them are empty or abandoned. There are 34 vacant lots there. So you see a lot of issues with poverty, abandoned buildings, drugs. There are a lot of drug deals. It's been described as an open-air drug market where people come in off 42nd Street, do their deal in sort of a private area, and then leave. And then also a lot of violent crime and gun crimes in that area.
And what are some of the reporting challenges associated with this, Ryan, with getting at this?
Well, there's a few challenges. I mean, right now the city is engaged in litigation with a homeowners association, has been for more than the past 5 years. So anytime, you know, as we've learned, anytime we're reporting on something that involves litigation, for example, it sort of makes everyone a little more reluctant to talk to us about what's going on.
Lawyers do tend to stop the conversation.
But what's, you know, there's a lot of things that you can look at with this property. And I think for James and I, what we really wanted to make sure we did was not get bogged down in some of the things that you see in court or in litigation, but instead try to get to the actual stories for people who are living there or who are doing important work there. And that's why we, you know, wanted to talk to Leroy. That's why we spent time with IMPD officers. That's why we knocked on doors. And once you start talking to the people who are living this, the stories become a lot easier to tell.
Officer Schell, what are some of the challenges in policing a place like this area?
First of all, thanks for having me.
Oh, certainly.
some of the challenges that I know some of my peers and I face on a daily basis is just the run log, the amount of dispatch runs that may take an officer away from the area. So available assets, if you will. But it's not to say that we aren't always focused on this area. As some projects may take a little bit more time, but we always try to have an active presence in the area. But sometimes officers are called to other areas based off of the nature of different crimes that are occurring.
Well, and I'm wondering also if, because it is in this area, even if the units have been abandoned, if somebody's in there, are there some constitutional protections in regard to whether you can enter without a warrant or anything like that? Are there policing challenges in that regard?
Very much so. So as a police officer, we have rules. I'm sure the whole country knows that police officers do have rules and limitations, but it also depends on the nature of a call. So in an area like this, that is known for high violence, officers are on heightened alert. We use due regard, and oftentimes officers are able to make those sound judgment calls in order, if they need to get access to a house, they're doing so, and they're doing so within their left and right limits.
Leroy, talk to me about this area a bit, and the ways that it has come to the position that it is in now.
Thank you for having me.
Oh, certainly.
The area is basically run down. You have people that are living there in a low poverty-stricken area where they don't have access to anything. They might have, as far as evictions goes and things like that, and this is one of the only places that they are able to get in. They come in with their children, and a lot of these apartments are self-owned by different landlords. And I think that it's time, and it's high time, that we as a community, that we take a stand for those that can't speak for themselves. We go in there basically every week, and we see the abandoned buildings. We see children are playing around in towards these abandoned buildings. They have nowhere to play at. They have nowhere to go at. And they're stricken to this one small area. And by them being stricken, they tend to mess around in those abandoned apartments, which should be boarded up. As we looked, when we first came in, the 10-point coalition, when we first started patrolling the area, we started seeing a lot of these apartments that were boarded up. They had wood on there for probably 4, 5, 6 years ago. And so the wood is very weak, and, you know, they can just go in and kick in that wood and go right into those apartments. You have a lot of squatters there, people that are homeless, doesn't have anywhere to go. You have drug addicts that doesn't have anywhere to go, and they use those apartments. Because of that, there has been a lot of things happening over in that area as far as violence goes. I believe that on last January, when we first started out there, there were a couple of murders out there, and a couple of the victims were found in some of those abandoned apartments. And so that really bothered me, as living in a community for the Far East Side. That really bothered me. And, we just kind of took a stand and said, enough is enough. We need to do something. And so, thankful to the Attorney General, we were able to go out there and patrol that area. And so now we're taking the streets back in that area. But the conditions are deplorable. I would rather talk about how do we get people that want to move out of there and put them in somewhere else, because this place is not a great standard way of living. And it hurts to see children running around and playing in things like this, where it's so deplorable. And so it's a hurtful feeling.
Officer Schell, you wanted to jump in.
little background on myself. I'm the intelligence officer for East District. So part of my job is to find trends, do a little analysis, background on why crime happens, who's committing the crimes. I'm also a Far East Side resident. I've known about town, this area, this community, Town and Terrace, since I've been a resident, and I've known it to be an issue. But recently, IMPD joined BNS and our the Department of Public Safety and formed this Neighborhood Enhancement Team Outreach that walked door-to-door in Town and Terrace on January 18th, found a total of 94 total violations that are now at the city level.
What sorts of violations?
Some of the ones that Leroy was mentioning. The conditions of the houses, those that needed to be boarded up, complaints, ordinance violations, you name it. Anything that we could consider as an ordinance violation by statute was listed, and it's now at with Vanessa and her team for follow-up with that. IMPD is also working diligently with Lawrence Police Department to address the issue of the ongoing crime in the area. So there's active plans going on. We support Leroy and his initiative, the Indy Star and their initiative, and we believe that we're taking the necessary steps to address what's going on in the community. So I just look forward to seeing these results.
If you're just joining us, we are talking today on No Limits about the way a community in Indianapolis has been affected and crime rates have been affected in that area by property neglect and abandoned homes. If you want to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or track us down on Twitter at wfyi. So I'm going to throw this out to whoever wants it. We've done several programs on really the intersections between poverty and really declining neighborhoods and crime. We've had, when he was still in the city, in both of his capacities in law enforcement, Troy Riggs on the show several times, Mayor Hogsett, Mayor Ballard. And, you know, remarkably, the themes that ran through there were that we need to figure out ways to intervene in some of these areas before things progress. And that one of the triggers was poverty. One of the triggers was having a lot of children are unsupervised and really didn't have anything to do. You know, property degradation and all of that were triggers. Is this... and everybody said this is what we need to do. This is how we, you know, this is what we have to do. We have to intervene. But the question, it seems to me, if we know what we have to do, is how do we go about doing it? Where do we make the impact? Go ahead, Leroy.
Well, first of all, I think that we make a huge impact if community get involved. We have to get involved together. This is our community. And if community doesn't get involved, and when I talk about community, I'm talking about business owners, I'm talking about churches, I'm talking about not only IMPD and 10 Point Coalition, but I'm talking about everybody getting in together as a community. We are good to talk about the issue, but don't nobody want to get their boots dirty. So no one wants to come out. We have to intervene. We have to intervene with this as a community and come together and stand and take a stand together for this.
Ryan.
And I just want to say there are a lot of people who are like Leroy and some of the nearby pastors. I mean, they are working really hard to help people in that area. And that's part of the reason why James and I are working on the project we are for the Star called The Toll, because what we're trying to do is to show the community that there are ways that other people can get involved, to show them that there are people who are already doing a lot of this great work, but showing them that this a community like Town and Terrace, maybe it's not where they live, you know, but it's a part of our community, and it's something that deserves the attention, because I mean, there are people living in this, among this abandonment and among this wreckage, and like Leroy said, it's not good.
Real quickly, Officer Shell.
I can speak for East District specifically. We've started walking the streets a lot more, especially with the Neighborhood Enhancement Team outreach with people like Robert Fry and Vanessa Henshaw. We've gone door to door because that's the best way we can connect and hear from the people. So it is my opinion and my opinion alone that the necessary steps are being made, and I'm starting to see a whole lot more proactivity on officers and our counterparts getting out there and engaging the community to find out what's needed.
We are talking about the ways that abandoned buildings and property neglect have affected one Indianapolis community. My guests are IMPD Officer Nathan Schell, Indy Star reporters Ryan Martin and James Briggs, and the 10-Point Coalition leaders Leroy Smith. I'm John Kroll. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StatehouseFile.com, and your host. We're talking today on No Limits about how property neglect and abandoned buildings have driven, in some ways, crime rates and other problems in one Indianapolis community. This is a product of collaborative reporting between WFYI and the Indianapolis Star. My guests are IMPD Officer Nathan Schell, Indianapolis Star reporters Ryan Martin and James Briggs, and 10-Point Coalition leader Leroy Smith. If you want to join this conversation, you can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi. Track us down on Twitter at WFYI. Or you can do what a listener named Joan has done and give us a call at 866-476-3881. Joan, you're on the air.
Yes, good morning. Good afternoon. I wondered if you have an answer as to how the complex got chopped up and actually people were able to buy portions of it.
Thanks very much. Thanks very much for the call and the question, Joan. We'll try to get an answer for you.
Okay.
Thanks. James.
So a little bit of the history of Town and Terrace. It's a really interesting property in the sense that it was marketed in the 1960s as sort of this dream community. And we found a lot of advertisements for it in our archives at the Indianapolis Star. It was marketed as, quote, the most completely planned community in America. And it was sort of introduced as like a rent-to-own concept before rent-to-own became ubiquitous. Mm-hmm. It was offering people the opportunity to rent apartments but build equity in them. And it was that's kind of how it started out, and it was a very middle-class neighborhood through the 1960s. The decline began when jobs started leaving that area. Some of the major employers in that area are Fort Benjamin Harrison, closed 1991, Western Electric, Chrysler, Maytag. When those employers left the area, the area started to decline more broadly around Town and Terrace. And within that property, sort of what led to where we are now is there's this unique and antiquated homeowners association that manages the property, and the leadership of that organization has consolidated ownership of property. So people own dozens of properties who are in that ownership structure. And the city and that HOA have been locked in this litigation for now since 2013. And that has sort of led to a lot of the decline in that area.
What's the nature of the litigation?
So the city owns a lot of those units, and the city would like to demolish them on sort of a surgical level, not whole-scale demolition of the entire property, but it would like to demolish certain units. And it has not had the right to do that. It's had to fight the HOA to get any sort of leverage there. And the HOA, even though the city owns units, has not allowed the city to participate in that process.
Ryan.
And so the way that this property is set up, you know, if you go to like an apartment complex, there's one single owner for the entire complex. What's different about Town and Terrace, though, is that each individual unit is individually owned, and that includes not only what you see inside the unit, but also the little bit of gutter on the outside, or the little bit of roof, or the little bit of wall, even though it's typically not the case anymore, just because of when this property was established. And when you look at the litigation and the complexity between the city and the HOA, you know, Indiana takes its property rights very seriously. And so what the judge has been saying to the city over and over again, well, multiple judges have been saying to the city over and over again, is you got to respect these bylaws that were established a long time ago for the HOA, which occupies much of the property, not all of it, but much of it. And so, you know, one small wrinkle for the city, for example, when it wants to demolish a unit within the HOA boundaries, the Homeowners Association Board can basically send that to an architectural review committee. And that committee is established to basically handle anything that is any exterior improvements that are wanted at any unit. And, of course, they don't want the city to demolish the units. The we weren't able to interview anyone from the Homeowners Association. We tried multiple times to reach their attorney. But what they said in court documents is they would prefer that the city instead relinquish its units that it owns or fix them up, which is not, by the city's standards, not necessarily feasible because of some of the realist.
Then the city becomes the landlord if they rent them out. Otherwise, it's money that's just plowed into something, a place that's not being used, right?
Right, and they've actually had studies done out there to show what's feasible for the properties that the city acquired, and that there's just not any return on that.
Well, Leroy, before we went to the break, I framed a question about you know how we do holistic responses to this larger thing, and I did not mean that as an indictment of in any way of the efforts that people are trying to make. What I was trying to get at is these are complex problems. I mean, we're talking about jobs moving elsewhere, a whole lot of powerful socioeconomic demographic forces at work here. At some level, how do we intervene there, and what should be the strategy? I get the fact that people are trying very hard to work at a human level to help all those who are affected here. But, you know, a lot of people, I think, who are listening to this are going to think that's a little bit like throwing pebbles or maybe even rocks at a tank. Maybe the trick is how do we go about stopping the tank?
Yeah. Well, I think that we all have to start from the ground level on this. The more community effort we get out there, the better it will be. I think intervention plays a big part because, as you know, that side of town is basically has a food desert in it.
Mm-hmm.
And what we do is my team and I, we go out and we feed out there. We feed hot meals because people don't have access to the jobs and things like that, and they're out there starving. And these children, as we see, these children are out there starving.
Mm-hmm.
And so we decided to get together with a couple of companies. One was Willer Mission. The other was Tinker Street Restaurant. And we decided to get together and at least serve a hot meal once a week or once every other week at the expense of these other companies to go out and give hot meals to these children.
Mm-hmm.
And if you ever come and join in with us, you'll see how hungry these children really are out there in this area. There's no access. That's why you see a lot of crime happening there. That's why a lot of guys come in there selling drugs there, because there's no access. It's like going into a dead spot.
Mm-hmm.
And when you have a dead spot, there's nothing alive in it.
Mm-hmm.
And so we are trying to make it alive again because our children are our future and they mean a lot to us. Not only that, but their parents mean a lot to us. What do we do together to bring the parents out of this poverty-stricken area and to get them into a better place where they can see life, they can see fullness of life and begin to dream again and begin to have hopes again? We are out there to give the hope that's missing out there, right in that whole area. We talk about the food desert of something's not happening out there. And so we as a community, we have to come together and we have to sit down and collaborate together. I think it's all about collaboration of us coming together and saying, okay, let's take this step and this step and this step to get to this one.
Officer Schell, before we went to the break, you said that you had begun to see some signs of improvement in the area. Could you talk about what those signs are that you're seeing specifically? What are the things that encourage you?
What's encouraging me is the efforts, the multi-agency missions that we're putting together, the deep thought process that all these key leaders are putting together to address the issues and not just sitting at a table and talking about it for months on end. Mm-hmm. We're talking about it for days on end, maybe a few months, sometimes depending upon the scope of the mission. But as soon as we get the idea, we're actioning it and we're seeing that we're at least putting it on people's radar, that we know that there's an issue. We may not have this as an answer, but at least it'll tell us how we're doing to gauge on how to move forward. For instance, if I can give you an example, us walking door to door, addressing the issues and finding 94 violations. That's a win for us. Mm-hmm. Because before that, the city really hadn't had an opportunity to really get deep down to talk to people about the issues. They've only been able to see visually with issues. But on this particular mission, we were able to go door to door, get a big picture of why the issues are occurring from the people, and then so we can start putting some ideas together on resources. So also with the Neighborhood Enhancement Team outreach, we had vendors like Cafe, Gleaners Food Bank that provided meals, WIC, to assist the people that don't have the means to support themselves. We did at least provide that to the community on that day.
If you are just joining us, we are talking about the ways that property neglect and abandoned homes have affected crime rates and created other problems in one Indianapolis community. This is part of a collaborative reporting project between WFYI and the Indianapolis Star. If you want to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at NoLimitsWFYI or track us down on Twitter at WFYI. So, Ryan, when we were talking a little bit ago, I've been thinking about the comments you and James made about this litigation between the HOA and the city. And I've been trying to think of the image I would want to use. It sounds like something between a catch-22 and really a vacuum of accountability here. At some level, the city can point at the Homeowners Association, and the Homeowners Association can point back at the city. James is nodding his head, so I think he's probably the one who's going to lean in on this one, Ryan, but I promise you'll get your crack too. And that creates all sorts of challenges. Do you get some sense? My secondary question is going to be, okay, if the city can't buy or fix up these other units that it currently owns, is it possible, or is there some consideration toward buying out the owners of the HOA and then demolishing the property or refurbishing it as some sort of subsidized or public housing?
To address that question first, no, the city has not made any effort or does not so far have any plans to try to acquire the existing units that are owned by members of the HOA. That hasn't been a remedy at this point. But I think what you just pointed out reveals sort of a disconnect we saw between where public policy is at in trying to solve this problem and where the actual people who are living through these conditions are. On the public policy track, you have the city going through this litigation, which it's been in for years. It doesn't seem like it's going to end anytime soon. And also trying to crack down on the owners of these properties through violations, which were mentioned earlier. But in the meantime, you still have people who there's no solution for. One, I think the most heartbreaking story we heard was someone, Leroy, introduced us to, a woman named India Coleman, who she was in her home last June and she heard gunshots and she tried telling her children at first, oh, those are just fireworks, baby, go back to bed. But then it became clear, no, these are gunshots, this is serious, something's going on outside. And it turned out someone was killed near her home and found later on. She has not had her children back at home with her since then. And so you have people who are living through fear and in a situation, or at least in her case, where she doesn't feel like she can have her children with her because the situation is so unsafe. And a lawsuit isn't going to help her. Cracking down on a code violation isn't necessarily going to help her. So there's a gap right now in the public policy where the people who are suffering the worst of these circumstances, there's really no solution for. And I think that's maybe one focus that's not getting enough attention. What is the solution for a woman living in that circumstance? Is there help for her to move somewhere else? Right now there isn't.
Ryan.
You nailed it when you said that in litigation they're basically pointing at each other. I mean, it kind of depends on, you know, I'm not an attorney, so mm-hmm. I had to spend a lot of time reading a lot of these filings to really understand much of anything. But there's constantly new arguments lobbed at each other that seems to kind of stall the whole process more than there ever seems to be any resolution. I'm sure depending on who you talk to, they may say the other side is to blame, of course. But one thing that's really important to note here is that we looked at a bunch of leases out there, and there's really good money to be made for owning rental properties at Town and Terrace, despite everything we're talking about here. You know, we took a sampling of 15 properties in our story and found that the average rent was $450 a month. And then we also looked at all of the assessed valuation of all of those properties, and you could pay off most of those properties with just a year or two's worth of rent, basically. And then after that, it's all profit. Because there's very little evidence of money being poured back into the properties to make them better, of course. So when you say, has the city considered trying to buy out some of the owners there, I'm not necessarily sure that the owners would be open to that. That's one of the mm-hmm. questions we wanted to ask, but we were unable to.
If you're just joining us, we're talking about how abandoned homes are affecting crime rates in one Indianapolis community. If you want to join the conversation, you can do what a listener named David has done and give us a call at 866-476-3881. David, you're on the air.
Well, good afternoon, gentlemen. It's a pleasure Certainly. Listening to this. I think I heard the story of the young lady who I heard her on WFYI, I believe, mm-hmm. Telling her story how she had sent her kids away because of the crime. The question I have is actually kind of a quick one. There was a gentleman, I didn't catch everybody's names because I turned the show on a little bit late, who was speaking about how he was going out and serving meals at least once a week or a couple times a week. I'd like to get some information on that because after a pretty serious illness, I'd like to get back into the volunteerism that has always been a part of my family to help out with something like that with someone who may not be in the position that I am. If you could give some information about that so some folks could consider getting involved with your program to help out.
That we can do. Thanks very much for the call and the question, David.
Thank you. Uh-huh.
Leroy, I think that one's right in your wheelhouse.
Yeah. Thanks, David, for even suggesting to come out to want to help someone else in the community. You can always get in contact with us at info@indy10point.org. Again, info@indy10point.org.
What sorts of help do you need the most with this, would you say?
Well, basically, what we need is to find people that are willing to help support to get hot meals to these individuals in this home, in this area. We basically do from 42nd and Post. There's about three apartment complexes that we serve. We serve Town and Terrace, Meadowlark Apartments, and also Postbrook. We serve them as well. So we have hundreds of children. We do it probably over 200 to 300 at a time.
If you're just joining us, we are talking about how property neglect and abandoned buildings are affecting crime in one Indianapolis community. My guests are IMPD Officer Nathan Schell, Indianapolis Star reporters Ryan Martin and James Briggs, and 10 Point Coalition leader Leroy Smith. I'm John Kroll. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StatehouseFile.com, and your host. We're talking today about an important collaborative reporting project between WFYI and the Indianapolis Star that explores the ways that property neglect and abandoned buildings are driving crime rates and other persistent problems in one Indianapolis community. My guests are Indianapolis Metropolitan Police Officer Nathan Schell, Indianapolis Star reporters Ryan Martin and James Briggs, and 10 Point Coalition leader Leroy Smith. If you want to join the conversation, you can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. You can find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi. You can track us down on Twitter at WFYI. Or you can do what a listener named Samantha has done and give us a call at 866-476-3881. Samantha, you're on the air.
Hi, everyone. Thanks for having me.
Certainly. What's on your mind?
I just had an idea, and I know that it's thinking optimistically, but I agree that the city should give property ownership to the homeowners association, or they should at least drastically reduce those prices so that those people in that community can afford to take over those properties. Some of those people could, you know, fix up those apartments and turn them into like a rental, or they could turn them into different businesses. And by doing that, they could also be hiring local people in the community. I think the government should also give these recent business owners a grant so that they can, you know, purchase these supplies and these tools necessary to help them succeed. I believe that if people are given an opportunity to be creative and successful, they will do that. And I think building up that community from within will be the best way to help these people.
Thanks very much for the call and the question, Samantha, and the suggestion.
No question. It's an idea.
Certainly. So let me throw this one to Ryan and James first. Part of what the challenge here is that it's not necessarily the people who are living in the apartments who own them now, right? That what you see is that people are buying them almost as investments. As I think Ryan said at the break, you put very little money down and you rent the place out for $450. You recoup your money within a year, year and a half. So it's a real attractive investment. What would be if these were put up for sale? What would prevent the folks who already own a dozen or more of the apartments from just buying more?
Well, in addition to the rental properties, there's if you just hop on Craigslist, you can see a bunch of rent-to-own properties out there with prices that are basically end up being more than double what you'd get if you just had a bunch of cash on hand. One of the big challenges that the city is going to face here is that the reason the city acquired a lot of these properties, basically there's been 97 properties or so since 2011. The prior owners walked away from the properties. They weren't worth it to the prior owners, so the city acquired them.
So they did like a quit claim and just dropped the thing, right?
It was just they didn't pay their taxes and acquired them through a tax sale. And so it isn't as if the city went out there intentionally, at least at the time, it didn't appear that the city was intentionally scooping up properties in order to do something with them beyond what James talked about earlier, which is the plans to demolish the ones that were in bad shape. Whether the city's strategy is going to change since litigation has dragged on for so many years, I think that's a fair question to ask.
We've gotten a Facebook question comment from a listener named, I hope I'm pronouncing this right, Keisha. And again, if you want to join the conversation via Facebook, you can find us at No Limits WFYI. She writes, my family recently had a similar conversation about the area on the west side of Indianapolis from 56th to Lafayette. When I commented that it's the duty of the community to support the local businesses in the area and make an effort to grow the community from within, my sister commented that this was not her community and she did not want to claim any responsibility for its success or lack thereof. She lives just down the street near Eagle Creek. How can we inspire people to take an interest in facilitating growth within these communities or make them understand the importance of everyone's combined effort to grow or reinvest in these at-risk communities? Leroy, I think that one is one you can speak to.
Yeah, thank you. One of the things is that, you know, you find people that just because they don't live in that specific area, they don't want to have anything to do with it. But once again, we are also so quick to talk about it. When these different stories and crimes come up, we talk about one of the areas, Far East Side, of all of the murders that's happening, of all of the gunfighting that's happening, all of the violence and the drugs that are happening over there. Well, the only way that we can do something about it is that we come out together, together collectively, and take a stand and make sure that these things are coming to a halt. You have to get involved. These are our people out here. Mm-hmm. And so we have to get involved. And if we don't get involved, then we're going to continue to see this, and it's going to get worse. We deal, the 10-Point Coalition, we basically deal with the ages of 12 to 25. Can you imagine your own child getting out there and something happening to them while they're in one of those areas? Can you imagine that, to get that phone call? It's heart-wrenching. And so we have to, as a community, we have to make a stand together. Together we can do it. Divided we're falling. But together we can make a difference. And that's what we're about. We're about making a difference. Just like the officer said, that we have many churches that are over there that wants to make a difference. Pastor James Jackson, he wants to make a difference. He believes in community. He wants to make a difference. So there's things that we're doing with him to make a difference in that area. There are a lot of unsolved murders over there in that area that we need to make a difference from. And these are people that are living within this place that are afraid to come out. I know one lady over there in town in Terrace, she's afraid to even come out of her home because of the unsolved things that are going on. And so if we can't talk with the officers, then we need to be able to talk with someone so that they can talk with the officers, that we can do it together. And so together we can do this. And that's why everyone in the community needs to get involved.
I've gotten an email from a listener named Sean, who's a regular listener. And again, our email address, if you want to join the conversation, is nolimits@wfyi.org. Sean writes, can you please have someone call me at, and I'm not going to give your phone number over the air, Sean. I lived in a HUD apartment building for 21 years with zero complaint, and the manager was not taking care of the place. Crime, neglect, roaches, mice, bed bugs, etc. So I wrote HUD in D.C. I then got taken to court, never seeing a judge, and my 21 years of no complaints didn't mean anything because then I was evicted by a judge I never saw or got to talk to. I'm in a wheelchair and out of eight wheelchair accessible apartments, it's a little in the building. There never were more than three wheelchairs in those places. I was also threatened that if I didn't sign something saying that I would not sue them, that I would never be able to get into a HUD housing unit ever again. I was never loud, drugs, drinking, or anything like that. My apartment was empty for over 2 years before anyone got in. I saw plenty of really, really, really bad stuff, and quite a bit is still going on. I really think people should know. Thank you, and keep up the great work. Wow. Officer, that sort of complaint sounds like he needs to talk to someone in a position of authority. What would you recommend he do? And I will give you his number. I'm not going to give it to you over the air, but I will give you his number before you leave here.
Sure. There's always somebody on IMPD, whether it be myself or a member of our community relations unit, that could reach out to him and try to get some of his questions answered.
If there are people like this who, and I'm going to throw this, how can they help with the law enforcement efforts in this area if they're, you know, experiencing things like this or observing them on a daily basis? I mean, how should they go about helping you and the folks who are working on this?
A lot of this starts with just saying hello. Every officer that you see is an extension of your family, an extension of the community. We're people, too. We had to go home to our families. And I know a lot of my peers and a lot of the officers that I work with, I speak very highly about them because the work ethic that I see and the product that they put forth for the city is one that is unmatched amongst any other police department that I've had the experience of following. So if the people would just make an extra effort, if on an occasion an officer would, when they see somebody, they always stop and give the kids something. And we just need to take advantage of every opportunity, bridge the gaps.
We are talking about how neglect has driven crime rates and other problems in one Indianapolis community today on No Limits. If you want to join the conversation, you can do what a listener named Sam has done. Give us a call at 866-476-3881. Sam, you're on the air.
Yeah, hi. I own a local property management company, and I had two primary questions, I guess. One being, what has been the uptick in police presence there in terms of patrols and officers? having a heavier presence in the area, more community engagement, et cetera. The second one is more about the topic in regards to how the code violations and MCHD violations are not working. I've owned my property management company for 16 years now, and it really surprises me that that does not have an impact in that area, because we deal with MCHD violations. We're in and out of court for clients, et cetera. And that's a very heavy stick that the city can use. When those code violations are not corrected and the properties are not improved, those fines go on the tax record. If those fines are not paid via their taxes, then, you know, the city can take back those properties as they have in the past. And it seems as if that was being used correctly, if the code enforcement department was doing that, you would get rid of a lot of those bad actors, those bad landlords, just through the sole process of continuing those fines. They're either going to get tired of it, of paying those fines, so they're going to sell the property, or they're going to get tired of paying all that money to make the repairs, or they're not going to pay the fines, they're not going to make the repairs, which means it goes on the tax rolls and the city eventually takes the property back via that process.
Sam, I'm going to see if I can get an answer for you. Officer Schell.
I appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
Hey, Sam, Officer Schell here. So first, for your second question, we'll refer that to the Office of Corporation Counsel. But in regards to the proactive patrols, it is my responsibility, being the dedicated intelligence officer for East District, to follow the crime patterns and try to get ahead of it. It's a challenge, but myself and the other people that I work with do a great job of trying to get ahead on that. So to answer your question, there's been an increase in crime, specific groups, specific age groups that we're trying to get ahead on. And we're not necessarily just trying to do proactive policing, but engaging with violence reduction program and talking to the kids face to face on other options that they have. So us being out there isn't necessarily doing proactive policing, doing traffic stops. It's community engagement. It's utilizing some of our resources and assets to find other options to keep to give the community what they want, which is a safe neighborhood.
Ryan.
Just to talk a little bit more about his first question, we talked to five or six different IMPD officers for this story, including a couple who that's their beat, where they spend all of their time. And one of the big challenges that every single one of those officers talked to us about was at this complex, there's a single road, a single street that enters the complex, and a single street that then exits. And basically, any time an officer drives in, it's very apparent that an officer is driving in. So, you know, sort of like tucked away off of one of the courtyards where officers told us an open-air drug market operates, and where we found in a federal indictment an allegation of a $10,000 shipment of heroin was being sent. Basically, anyone who operates in that area, they can run away very quickly as long as there's someone who's sort of looking out at the entrance to the complex. And every single officer we talked to talked about that being a big challenge for them.
That they're sent in effect, and people basically know as soon as their boots hit the ground that it's time to run.
In one case, even, there was a surveillance camera mounted on the back of a unit pointed directly at the entrance. That camera was mounted on what one officer told me was a known drug house.
We're getting close on time here, and I'm going to try to get in a couple more questions from listeners. Nathan, you're on the air.
Hi, thanks for a really interesting topic. I can imagine neglect is something that is kind of widespread in other communities as well. Are there any research, or has there been any effort to try and understand or learn from what other communities have been trying to do that have similar situations from ours that they've either tried to solve or have encountered issues with?
Thanks very much for the call and the question. I would guess, Ryan, have you looked at other communities?
No, not on this. And I think part of the reason for that is this complex is just so unique. It can't easily be compared because of the HOA situation, because of the geography, the lawsuit that's going on. There's so many unique complexities to this specific property that it wouldn't make a very easy comparison to other properties or other cities.
So is this going to be the focus of your reporting going forward this particular community, or are you going to start looking at other communities here in the city, Ryan?
Not only are we going to be looking at other communities in the city, but we're also wanting to look at other topics that contribute to what we're experiencing with violence in Indianapolis. And James and I would just want to let people know that they can contact us with any ideas, any questions, any suggestions, and also hopefully sign up for our newsletter at indystar.com/thetoll.
And if they wanted to contact you with story ideas or suggestions, how do they go about doing that?
Well, my email address is ryan.martin@indystar.com, and I can also be found on Facebook, Twitter, on our website, all those things.
James?
And I'm james.briggs, B-R-I-G-G-S, at indystar.com.
Okay, and we are almost, we've got maybe 90 seconds here before we have to sign off. I'm going to give about 20 of those seconds to you, Leroy. What are ways people, again, can step in and help?
Well, I think that we have to come and collaborate together as a community. I think one of the things is that if people want to move out of there, let's find the resource to help them get out of there.
And Officer Shell, I'm going to give you the last word here. What can they do to help you and your brother officers? Sister officers, too, I should say.
Just say hello. We'll start there.
Just be friendly?
Just be friendly. And the officers will take the conversation from there. They know what they need here.
Well, I'm going to ask, I've still got calls and there are others. I'm going to ask all of you if you would be willing to continue this conversation on our Facebook page after we go off the air, because clearly there's a lot of community interest in this subject. And I'd like to thank my guests, IMPD Officer Nathan Shell, Indianapolis Star reporters Ryan Martin and James Briggs, and 10 Point Coalition leader Leroy Smith, for what's been a provocative conversation. I'd also like to thank our listeners and remind everyone that there are flash flood warnings in place for much of central Indiana right now. Please be careful out there. I am John Kroll. You've been listening to No Limits. Thank you for joining us.
No Limits is a production of 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, Indianapolis. Producers, Sarah Neal Estes, Roxana Caldwell, and Jill Sheridan. Interactive Media Coordinator, Scott McAllister. Technical Producers, Cedric Freeman and Chris Flood. And Board Engineer, Joe Hatcher. Emily Matheny screens our calls. No Limits is made available through IPBS, Indiana's public broadcasting stations.